now, your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. And a great day to look at the double standard. Generally, if somebody on the left calls President Trump a fascist or a new Hitler or something like that, that's fine. People don't get concerned. But when somebody on the left calls Bernie Sanders a Hitler by implication, who talks about the advance of the Sanders campaign, the way that the Nazi armies advanced through Europe, people have a conniption fit. We will get to the now organized campaign by the Bernie bros to get Chris Matthews fired. Now they have a whole hashtag, Fire Chris Matthews, going on because of what he said about the Sanders campaign. We'll play that for you coming up on the Medved Show. There's also a reassuring new poll, brand new, just released literally minutes ago, about what is actually going on in South Carolina, where the candidates are focused today, but they're also going on. They have to look ahead to Super Tuesday because South Carolina is Saturday. They're debating this Tuesday night. Then they have South Carolina on Saturday. And then less than 72 hours after the votes are counted in South Carolina is Super Tuesday. And that's for all the marbles. That could, but probably won't, end this Democratic battle for the nomination. Why won't it end it? Because it's going to remain competitive between more than two candidates, which is crucial if our country is going to avoid the disaster of an unreconstructed old Marxist and America hater actually winning the nomination of his party. 1-800-955-1776 is our phone number. Okay, on MSNBC, one of the real pillars of that particular network has been Chris Matthews. Now, Chris Matthews is a mainstream Democrat. He is not a radical lefty. He is not a Democratic socialist. He's a Democrat. And he's a Democratic Democrat, if you want. And that is not an ideal thing to be in this country. I do not support the Democratic Party. However, I don't think that Chris Matthews quite deserves what he's getting because of some comments he made about Bernie's victory in the Nevada caucuses. This is Chris Matthews on MSNBC.
It looks like Bernie Sanders is hard to beat right now. I'm with Carville all the way in terms of the dangers of what lurks, what lies ahead in November. I'm very much aware of them. They're sitting on so much Oppo research on Bernie, what he said in the past about world affairs, how far left he is. I'm not sure how far left he is, but they're going to make the most of that in terms of world politics. They're going to kill him. But I think it's a little late to stop him. And I think that's the problem. I was reading last night, Brian, I know you're a history guy, too. I'm reading last night about the fall of France in the summer of 1940. And the general, Renault, calls up Churchill and says, it's over. And Churchill said, how can it be? You got the greatest army in Europe. How can it be over? He said, it's over. So I had that suppressed feeling. I can't be as wild as Carville, but he is damn smart. And I think he's damn right on this one.
Is there something terribly offensive about that? Well, apparently so. This says a contributor to MSNBC taking on his own network and one of the network stars, Chris Matthews, the same guy who I mentioned before, who says that they ought to ask at the debate on Tuesday night, do you think we should have more millionaires at the end of your term or fewer millionaires at the end of your term? Do you think we should have more billionaires at the end of your term or fewer billionaires at the end of your term? I guarantee you there would be fewer billionaires and millionaires at the end of Bernie Sanders' term because people would lose their money. That stupid, idiotic question led this Anand Giriharadas to say this about Chris Matthews.
I think about this network, which I love, which you love, and I think we have to look within also, why is a lobbyist for Uber and Mark Zuckerberg on the air many nights explaining a political revolution to us? Why is Chris Matthews on this air talking about the victory of Bernie Sanders, who had kin murdered in the Holocaust, and analogizing it to the Nazi conquest of France? The people who are stuck in an old way of thinking, in 20th century frameworks, in gulag thinking, are missing what is going on. It is time for all of us to step up, rethink, and understand the dawn of what may be, frankly, a new era in American life.
By the way, I do think that everybody should be free from Nazi analogies. But that wasn't what Chris Matthews was doing. He wasn't saying that Bernie Sanders is employing the techniques of Hitler or the appeals of Hitler, or that he is the equivalent of Hitler. He was using an analogy that had just struck him from history of something that seemed very unlikely at the time, but that people recognized was a fait accompli. It is true, by the way, that Bernie Sanders had family. Most of his father's family was wiped out, was killed en masse in Poland. These are people that Bernie never met. He didn't know. But that doesn't take away the family loss. What is, of course, striking about Bernie Sanders is that until people want to defend him against this analogy or to claim that Chris Matthews must now be fired for using an analogy of the fall of France, first of all, the analogy isn't true. It's not over. It's not over at all. I think that the anti-Bernie faction of the Democratic Party, which represents a majority of Democrats, is just getting mobilized now. And the one thing I can say about this, people bringing up Bernie's Jewish background in this context, is it can show, I don't know, the one of the very few positives that I can find in the Bernie Sanders campaign. Here's the positive, is for people who believe in anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, if you will just listen and take a look, there are lots and lots and lots of committed Jews who are very much opposed to this Jewish candidate. And it's not just because of his anti-Israel position, though that's part of it. His anti-Israel position relates to his anti-American position. If Bernie were asked a question, do you believe America should be more influential in the world or less influential in the world? Should we be more like Europe or should Europe be more like us? You know what Bernie would say. If he were honest, he would say it. He says we have to look to Denmark now. We have to follow Denmark. Denmark has actually moved in a less socialist direction recently with great success for center-right parties. The question that I would ask, and I wish they would ask in the debate tomorrow, I can't believe they're having that debate tomorrow. And I'm going to say this again because it's such a great question. And please, I hope that somebody who is running the debate will ask the question, ask it first of, I almost said Colonel Sanders. No, he's not the fried chicken guy. Of Senator Sanders. And here's the question, Senator Sanders. Is there anybody on this stage tonight with the other five candidates who are standing with you? Anybody on this stage tonight who you would consider as your vice presidential choice? And is there anyone on this stage who you would absolutely not consider? You think, no, I would never consider this person to be vice president. I would like to hear that question answered by all of the people up there on stage. Because all of them, to be honest, except for Bernie, have to rule Bernie out. Whatever happened to that argument between Bernie and Elizabeth Sanders? Well, she has basically swallowed it, despite the fact, Did I say Elizabeth Sanders? Yes, Elizabeth Warren. Whatever happened to that argument with Elizabeth Warren? You remember that argument? Where she said, and I actually think I believe her, she said that Bernie said to her, no, a woman can't possibly run. This is apparently when she was considering when, that a woman can't possibly win for the presidency. She was considering making the race, and she came to him and she spoke to them because they have a lot in common ideologically. And Bernie has just stoutly denied that he ever said such a thing. And Elizabeth Warren says he did. So who's right on this? Now, why is Elizabeth Warren just basically giving up? I'll tell you why. Her one hope for the presidency is this. And this is the way it works. Let's say that there are a number of candidates who stay in the race, including Elizabeth Warren. And she stays in the race because a week from tomorrow, and that's when it is, a week from tomorrow is Super Tuesday. A week from tomorrow, Massachusetts is one of the states that is voting. She'll win some delegates in Massachusetts. Not all of them. It's not a winner take all, but she'll win a bunch of them. And she will accumulate a bunch of delegates, and she'll come into the election with a bunch of delegates. And when you have all the different candidates who are heading toward Milwaukee, and they each have their pile of delegates, there are two ways it's going to work. One way is that there will be wheeling and dealing before the convention. And I think it's entirely possible that there is a majority of delegates who don't want Bernie Sanders. And probably Elizabeth Warren won't have enough delegates to put Bernie over. However, Elizabeth Sanders would be Elizabeth Warren, pardon me, I keep saying Elizabeth Sanders. She would be the one candidate who the Bernie backers might accept as a substitute. And where people in the party establishment might say, well, she's slightly more electable than Bernie. I'm not sure that's true, by the way. But I think that's her hope, is that you come to a deadlock convention and the Bernie people would back Elizabeth Warren, most of them, and some of the anti-Bernie people would back her as a better alternative than Bernie himself. Of course, the other idea, and this has been very much on the QT, is that you have the 550 superdelegates who come in on the second ballot, and they could start pushing the notion of a new candidate, somebody who hasn't been tarred, who hasn't been oppositional, who hasn't really taken a position. And the obvious new candidate that everybody wants is Michelle Obama, because she could probably unify the party. What, Bernie is going to say, no, I won't support Michelle Obama, who is one of the most popular figures in America today? Doubtful. And here is Donna Shalala, by the way. Donna Shalala, who has a tweet that she just issued. And she's the former president of the University of Miami. She held that position. And she was a former cabinet secretary under Bill Clinton. She says, I'm hoping that in the future, Senator Sanders will take time to speak to some of my constituents before he decides to sing the praises of a murderous tyrant like Fidel Castro. Well, good for you. And let me just say that this same Anand Jawaharlal, who doesn't want there to be any more billionaires, and said how outrageous it was, how Chris Matthews should be fired from MSNBC because he compared Bernie winning Nevada to the Nazis taking over France. He's not immune to people talking about all kinds of world historical analogies. Because after Bernie won in Nevada, Anand Jarharadas was with Joy Bihar, and he said this. In a flashback in which he compared Trump to Hitler and to African dictators. In other words, it's a clear double standard. He doesn't think it's appropriate at all to compare Bernie Sanders to a fall of a country to Nazi power. Whereas, well, the Hitler analogy is one he's very comfortable with. This is from April of 2018.
Trump is not our only problem, right? And I think that's where it's very important to remember. This is a diseased republic in which so many people agree on not speaking truth to power, in which so many people are so motivated by the protection of their careers that they won't do the thing that they promised themselves they would do when they were in high school and college, reading about the rise of Hitler or reading about corrupt dictators in Africa. And they said, you know, if I'm ever in a moment like that, you think to yourself in college, I'm going to be that guy who is brave.
Okay, is that a more direct analogy to Nazi takeover than Chris Matthews saying this reminds him of something he had just been reading in a historical account about Churchill getting a call from a French general saying it's over when they not? I mean, clearly what he is saying is a much more direct analogy. And he goes on, and this again is after Bernie had won his caucuses in Nevada. With Joy Behar, he characterized those of us who don't understand Bernie's victories as deeply out of touch. Listen.
You have someone talking about, in a way we have not heard, genuine, deeper democracy, popular movements, human equality in a meaningful way, and a politics of love in the tradition of Dr. King, and winning elections in America, the United States of America. And I just have to say, and I've been encouraged watching you on air talk about your own rethinking of things, which I think we all have to do to be in this work. I think this is a wake-up moment for the American power establishment. From Michael Bloomberg to those of us in the media, to the Democratic Party, to donors, to CEOs, many in this establishment are behaving, in my view, as they face the prospect of a Bernie Sanders nomination, like out of touch aristocrats in a dying aristocracy. Just sort of, how do we stop this? How do we block this? And there is no curiosity. Why is this happening? What is going on in the lives of my fellow citizens in this country? They may be voting for something that I find it so hard to understand. What is happening? What is happening? This is a moment for curiosity in America.
What is happening is the magical allure of free stuff. After all, you have this crotchety old guy who was promising to forgive all student debts, promising free college tuition to everybody, promising free medical care to everybody. You don't have to worry about it anymore. Promising reparations, promising billions of new jobs with the Green New Deal, promising unlimited spending, free child care. Do you know what that means? Now, all of the Democrats are promising expanded government programs and higher taxes, but Bernie won't even estimate the cost and won't even pretend to pay for it. And when you say, what is happening here? First of all, can we understand Bernie has come nowhere near winning even a majority of the Democratic votes that are available, let alone winning an election? And this idea that there is something that is happening because he's talking about genuine majority, or that there is a real desire for socialism, really? It's not reflected in what's going on around us. Meanwhile, a very public event, televised live, I think says more about what Americans believe. Coming up on The Medved Show. The Hill publication is reporting just an hour ago on a new poll, a PPP poll, about the Democratic race, which will be taking place on Saturday. That's right, this week. in South Carolina, where Bernie Sanders currently shows that he has 21% of the vote. And he's running second. Who's running ahead of him? Joe Biden, with 36% of the vote in South Carolina. And this will only be helped by the expectation that part of the Democratic congressional leadership and a real political legend in South Carolina, a member of the Congressional Black Caucus, Jim Clyburn, is reportedly all set to endorse Joe Biden. He'd be encouraged by this poll. It shows Joe Biden at 36% in South Carolina, which would be a commanding lead, would be a sound victory for him, and would put his campaign back on track right before Super Tuesday. Bernie Sanders, 21%. No other candidate in South Carolina received double-digit support in the survey. Elizabeth Warren placed third with 8%. A white billionaire activist Tom Steyer and former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg tied for fourth with 8% each. And this is pretty dramatic because Tom Steyer was running second, according to Metch polling, and up to 20%. Tom Steyer's support has collapsed, as it should. There is no reason in the world. See, what's the difference between Steyer and Bloomberg? Well, one thing is Bloomberg is enormously wealthier. I mean, Tom Steyer is estimated to be worth about $5 billion and Bloomberg 10 times as much, at least. And aside from that, Bloomberg has won elective office before. He's not running in his first race. He won every elective office he's ever sought. Now, he spent a great deal of his own money to make those victories possible, but still he won. He won three terms as mayor of New York. And that does make him, it seems to me, a more credible candidate, so long as he delivers a more adequate debate performance tomorrow night. All of this is history. And right now, I want to remind you that our special sale at Medved History Store, including the complete Medved History Library, an almost hour-by-hour account of the American Revolution, about the causes of the Civil War, about the question, is America really a Christian nation, a secular government? For sure, that's guaranteed in the Constitution. But a Christian nation, the miracle of the Constitution, what happened at the Constitutional Convention? All of these questions are answered with storytelling. And the stories are all true. And they're amazing. And the sale has been extended because of the phenomenal response. You can get the entire Medved History Library. That's some 80 different offerings. It is much more than 100 hours of broadcasting. And it's available on a USB flash drive or loaded on an MP3 player. It's 75% off this week only. 75% off. Go check it out. And then there's an email that came in that's related to this. It says, Michael, I've been reading a number of historical books on U.S. presidents, some by David McCullough and Doris Kearns Goodwin, both outstanding writers, the two by George W. Bush, etc. She says, I very much like the two histories you wrote, The American Miracle and God's Hand on America. And by the way, you can still get a signed copy of God's Hand on America, brand new book by me, subtitled Divine Providence in the Modern Era. And when you buy that book, a signed copy hardcover for $30, you get a free 3-month subscription to be a Medhead, which is access to this show. It's a great, great deal. Go to medvedhistorystore.com or to michaelmedved.com. In any event, the emailer, who's named Jeffrey from Edmonds, Washington, writes in, I was hoping you could recommend a few presidential biographies you enjoyed and or authors you like best. Look, I just did a piece for Wall Street Journal about the five best books about presidential campaigns. And here are a couple of them that are worth considering. Edward Larson wrote a book called Magnificent Catastrophe about this classic race between John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, two of the greatest Americans who ever lived. They ran against each other. They actually ran against each other twice. Adams won the first time. The second time, which was a bitter, bitter campaign where Alexander Hamilton played a very complicated role. It's a fascinating story. It's told in this Edward Larson book called A Magnificent Catastrophe, and it's well worth reading. Another book, which is also about two great Americans who fought one another and installed, I think, one of our most dubious presidents, is a book called by William Manners, and it's from 1969, but you can get it everywhere. It's called T.R. and Will, The Friendship That Split the Republican Party. And it's about President Theodore Roosevelt and William Howard Taft and their split, and well worth checking out. Also, Edmund Morris. Edmund Morris writing on almost everything except for President Reagan. A biography of President Reagan is disappointing. But Edmund Morris has a three-volume set on Theodore Roosevelt that's outstanding, beginning with Mornings on Horseback. That's the name of his first volume. Check it out. Let me go quickly to Jim in Atlanta. Jim, you're on the Michael Medved Show.
Well, this is typical left-wing approach to silencing all opposition. For this guy to say that Chris Matthews needs to be taken off the air because he analogized Chris Matthews to Bernie Sanders to Hitler is preposterous. What Chris Matthews did was analogize a defeated French army to the defeated, he sees, presidential candidates in the Democratic Party. That's it. There was no equation, no analogizing Nazis to Bernie Sanders. It's ridiculous. And that's typical.
Isn't it? And by the way, this hashtag, it's been recirculated, and there are serious people out there, prominent people, who are calling for the firing of Chris Matthews. And it's totally absurd, and I assume that they won't do it on MSNBC. You're entirely correct, and you're making a very important point that I wish I had made, and good for you for making it, which is this is typical of the extreme left. They will not tolerate any dissent and will find some means to try to cut it off. You were about to say, Jim.
Read your Stalinist history. I mean, good grief. Go see the movie Death of Stalin, A Comedy of Terrors. you just go on and on. Utopia and Power. That's how he dealt with stuff.
Well, it is. And again, this is part of the totalitarian temptation, is simply to stifle all disagreement. I appreciate your call very much, and thanks for hanging on. When we come back, I want to make the case and explain it as clearly as I know how, why the current pressure, which is mounted up to force people out of the race, is probably mistaken, will probably help to win the race for Bernie Sanders, which I don't think any sane American can want. There's also another event, the tribute to Kobe Bryant. Very moving memorial service this morning. I watched a bunch of it. We will get to that and more, and what the lessons of that service are relevant to the presidential campaign. All coming up on The Medved Show.
What kind of a show are you guys putting on here today?
The Michael Medved Show.
One of the issues that I think that is missing in discussions by the Democrats of the issues that matter to America are issues of the family. And yes, some of these do have to do with marriage and children. They talk all the time about a woman's right to choose, which means a right to terminate a pregnancy, which means a right to abortion. That's what they mean. And they talk all the time about, well, you can't put children in cages at the border. And, of course, ignore President Obama's record with that. And they're right. We should not put, whether you're President Obama or President Trump, children in cages at the border. Not a good thing for the United States to do. Having said that, Today I was very much struck by how unifying and beautiful the memorial service was at the Staples Center in Los Angeles for the late Kobe Bryant and for his daughter, his 13-year-old daughter who died with him in the helicopter crash. It was broadcast live, the entire thing, and at first I was wondering, well, why are they broadcasting this entire memorial service? But it was one of those things, and not to compare it, because it can't be compared. We had a great president named George Herbert Walker Bush, and they broadcast his entire memorial service, and it was uplifting for the country. We have here a great athlete and a great father and husband who was also mourned. And yes, I know. There's an imperfection in that record. But I think this was very, very deeply encouraging event where people came together and spoke so beautifully. Kobe's wife, Vanessa, spoke about their relationship with courage and real love and poetic force. Listen.
Kobe and I have been together since I was 17 and a half years old. I was his first girlfriend, his first love, his wife, his best friend, his confidant, and his protector. He was the most amazing husband. Kobe loved me more than I could ever express or put into words. He was the early bird, and I was the night owl. I was fire, and he was ice, and vice versa at times. We balanced each other out.
She also spoke about him being the MVD, the most valuable dad, that with his four girls, he would always talk about how smart and beautiful they were. Jimmy Kimmel completely broke down when he spoke about the tragedy that took Kobe away from an admiring world.
I don't think any of us could have imagined this. Everywhere you go, you see his face. His number, Gigi's face, Gigi's number. Everywhere, at every intersection, there are hundreds of murals painted by artists who were inspired, not because he is a basketball player, but because Kobe was an artist too. I've been trying to come up with something positive to take away from this, and it was hard because there isn't much. But the best thing I think I was able to come up with is this, gratitude. It seems to me that all we can do is be grateful for the time we had with them and for the time we have left with each other. And that's all.
That's Jimmy Kimmel. Beyonce sang. And there was a performance that knocked me out by Alicia Keys. And something else that I didn't know about Kobe Bryant, apparently he loved the music of Beethoven. And she played the Moonlight Sonata because Kobe had taught himself painstakingly to play the first movement of the Moonlight Sonata, which is not that easy to play. It's not one of the most challenging works, but still. And the point is, okay, Beethoven's a dead white guy. And the kind of guy that people on the left want to dismiss as unimportant. But he is a foundation of Western culture, of which Kobe and Vanessa and their family were so much. And the idea that this beautiful tribute to Kobe transcended race or economics and really was about what we have in common, and yes, a spirit of family and loving family, I think that ought to encourage people. One of the big family hits of 2019 is just out on video and on DVD and video on demand. But is it really worth your investment of time? Check out Frozen 2's review right here.
Now, It's time for MedVid on Movies.
Frozen was one of the most profitable animated movies of all time. So now, inevitably, we have Frozen 2, where Elsa, voiced by Idina Menzel, starts hearing a disembodied voice that summons her into mysteries and danger in Frozen 2. New on video on demand and DVD.
Has Elsa seemed weird to you?
She seems like Elsa.
There's this voice. Voice?
The kingdom is not safe. Find who is calling to you. They may have answers.
Well, the answers, such as they are, involve an enchanted forest and a tribe of indigenous people who come across as Scandinavian Arctic Native Americans. The old crew is also back, including Olaf the Snowman and Sven the Reindeer, and they're all engaged together in a magical quest.
I'm going with you.
Where are we?
How did you get in the forest?
The mist parted for us.
Impossible.
Where did you learn magic?
Elsa, get out of there!
You can't just follow me into fire.
Then don't run into fire.
Magic is very alluring. Without you, she may lose herself to it.
I'd offer you a plot summary, but you wouldn't understand it, nor do I, even after having seen this film. The animation is impressive, truly lovely in many points, but the seven songs that assault the audience at ear-splitting volume are good proof that more isn't better. In other words, there's no equivalent of Let It Go. If there does appear to be a message here, it's that Elsa and her sister Anna need to come to terms with some sort of ancestral guilt or princess privilege. It's rated PG, with sections that may be much too intense for potential moviegoers below the age of 4. Frozen 2 may satisfy younger moviegoers, but be prepared to be pestered with questions about the story, which no one can answer. 2 stars for Frozen 2. And tomorrow on the Michael Medved Show, there is so much to cover. More and more Democrats are trying to figure out how to stop Bernie Sanders. One of the ways not to stop him is to have candidates drop out. If there's just one candidate against Bernie, it is much more likely that he will get a higher percentage of the delegates. The point is that if this continues this way, Bernie could have the most delegates but still fall far short of the 50% he needs. Now, that doesn't mean everybody should stay in. I don't think there's any reason in the world for Amy Klobuchar at this point to stay in, or for Tom Steyer to stay in, or someone like that. There's also an attack on Pete Buttigieg from a group that identifies itself as queer activists who say he isn't gay enough and they're opposed to him. And we will also be talking about the governor of California, who wants doctors to be able to write prescriptions to give homeless people free homes. Sounds like a plan? Not one worthy of this greatest nation on God's green earth. We'll talk tomorrow.